Hi, I'm Chick McGee, and we are off the air.
Let's do this.
In the morning in the back of the beamer. Now, mama, what's up? I know that you're a
what's up, mama?
When it comes to this, put down your back, just give me a kiss. I got a castle in the palace, got a crib in the city. I said I'd get you something nice.
This is Bob Schneider.
And you liked it like that, to be so big and to be so fat.
Is there anything he can't do?
I don't think there is. This is from the album The Californian. It's Bob Schneider. It's called Mudhouse.
I need to pull this back up.
I think so. We should just play the whole. Oh, here comes the hook. This is very good. Here we go.
They got no dough. All got 40 A's. Ain't got nobody, baby. I can call my shorty.
Nice.
Our good friend Bob Schneider. BobSchneiderMusic.com if you care to check him out. He's actually making us personalized music for the Off the Air podcast, and we're waiting that. I've talked with him. I talked with him within the last 7 days or so, and he's assured me that
to me at this point it feels like you're pulling my chain.
Yeah, he's apologized for taking so long, but he's definitely into it. So
good,
that's exciting.
I'm sure he's busy.
Once again, welcome to the Off the Air podcast. Thank you for downloading episode number 21. We are now legal. We can get drunk. I'm your host, Chick McGee. That's Jess.
Hello.
Hi, Jess. And that's Jason.
Yeah, I'm right here.
Okay, good. Today's show is going to be, I'm predicting it's going to be something else.
That's the phrase.
Out of control.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know if it's going to be out of control. It's just going to be, well, maybe. Maybe you're right. I was going to say, guess who else likes my new shirt?
Jason
likes my new shirt.
Considering there's three of us, and I already said I liked it. That was my Tommy John again.
I don't need somebody like that telling me about my shirt. Tommy, come on the podcast, Tommy.
Tommy.
No, you don't
wear flannel. You've been wearing black a lot lately.
Is this considered flannel?
Well, it's a thin flannel. It's not like you're going to go chop wood or something.
No.
That little polo guy indicates there will be no wood chopping.
Yeah, that's right. It's a polo shirt. But it's a button-up? Is that what they call this? A button-up shirt? I don't normally wear button-up shirts.
No.
I'll be honest, I've lost some weight, and I'm wearing button-up shirts.
Is that your Tommy John again?
I'm wearing a button-up. Because I normally wear T-shirts or a golf shirt or a sweatshirt or a hoodie.
I wear a shirt like that probably 2 or 3 days a week.
Yeah.
I do the
you
button.
Wear the button-up.
Oh, yeah.
I wear a shirt like yours every now and then.
Yeah, sure. Plain old green, long sleeve, nothing going on.
And what's your say? Jess has her shirt. What is it?
Weekend Warrior.
It looks like Weenie Warrior from over here.
Does it?
Yep.
And how convenient where the tires are, by the way.
My big old boobies.
It's framing your big old boobies.
Because I have a motorcycle, but I usually only ride it on the weekends.
That's right. And that makes you a weekend
warrior. Did you ride it much this summer?
I didn't.
Okay.
I did not.
Got too busy?
No. You know what? I shopped more for a sidecar than I did actually riding it. I would like to have a sidecar.
Okay.
She's tried to get rid of the motorcycle about
eight times. I have,
because
I don't feel like I ride it enough. But when I do want to ride it, it's so nice to jump on it and go.
Is it like a boat?
It's
kind of like a boat.
The two best days are the day you get it and the day you get rid of it.
That's true. Well, I know that you were not very happy when you heard that I got a motorcycle.
No, I was. It wasn't so much
happy. Concern?
I was angry. Because I don't think they're that safe.
They are not.
But I was shocked. I'm like, you got a motorcycle? Yeah, what in the world?
Well, I mean, I grew up on dirt bikes and
four-wheelers.
So did I. And guess what? I haven't ridden one since.
Tubing. And
I figured I consider myself lucky.
Did you tube?
No, I didn't tube.
You know, you happen to be.
We grew up on a.
You happen to be in the presence of the world's greatest, what they call it, tubing, right?
Right,
tuber,
I mean, if it was an Olympic sport.
Yeah.
I would gold medal in it.
We went to a lake, 4 or 5 years ago, and there was one of the. They have flying tubes that are big and are just aerodynamic enough that if you kind of know what you're doing, you can get them in the air for a little bit. And she was the only one.
But I was
like
doing
five
that before
guys.
They had flying tubes.
Right. She got it.
You made the normal tubes a flyer.
Right. Well, because my dad would. We grew up on. We had a lake house on Lake Lemon when I was a kid, and we shared it with cousins. I mean, everybody. Mm-hmm. And my dad, I think 9 tubes, that was the most he ever pulled at one time. I mean, you know, kids ranging from just walking to, you know, grandma, grandpa.
Now, are they all from the same point, or is it a tube train?
It's a ski. It was a mounted ski pole in the
middle. Knob,
of a
ski knob.
Ski
right.
boat.
They call that the knob.
I don't think they do.
Oh, it's a ski knob. You tie that.
But yeah.
It's a ski knob. You tie the ropes on there?
Yeah.
How did this get started?
No, so yeah, that's so we did that. And so we had four-wheelers and dirt bikes. And we had school buses converted into campers and all kinds of stuff. Yeah.
Wow.
We were the lake trash.
Okay. Wow, this is a nice evening here. Oh, here they come.
But you had the best time.
We had the best. It was the best time of my life. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, tell the snake story.
Oh.
Have you told this? No, I don't think you told the snake story.
There was roughly, I mean, on any given weekend, depending on who came down, there was from 10 to 20 children ranging in ages.
Cousins and friends.
Yes, ranging from babies to about 10.
Okay.
And I had a cousin and myself who were the 10-year-olds.
Okay.
And we... all of our names started with J's.
And, shocker.
Yeah. And so we're on this beach, and they put a pea gravel beach because they didn't want us tracking sand all over the house and the bus.
Sure.
So they gave us pea gravel. There were little snakes that were all over, come up, whatever. Every time there was a snake, kids would just scream and run up to the house, and you know.
Right.
So my dad wanted to show us that there's no reason to be afraid.
There's
of
just
a snake.
These little snakes.
They're just little snakes.
Little
there's
baby
no
snakes.
Don't
they're
worry
more.
About, don't worry
they're
about.
More scared of you than you
exactly.
are.
Exactly. Right. That's my dad. Yeah. Right. My dad said that all the time, and he said, "This is going to hurt me way worse than it's going to hurt you." Those are the two.
Which sure. is,
yeah.
Isn't,
that's
isn't
not true.
No.
That's nobody's
no.
beating
I'm
his
bust
ass.
Bust
no.
your ass.
No.
Yeah.
And so he jumps in the water, and he's like, "Here, look!" And he grabs the snake in one hand, and the snake just loses its shit, I guess, and bites him all up the arm. So he's got blood running down this arm, throws the snake in the other hand, snake bites him up the other arm.
What?
So my dad grabs the snake by the end of the, like by the tail, I guess, and just starts beating it up against this tree.
Swinging it like a baseball bat.
And all of us are screaming in horror.
He's covered in blood.
You don't need to be afraid of the snake.
Wham!
You know?
Wham!
Yes.
Was it poisonous?
No. Well, no, we found out later that it wasn't, but of course my aunt Betty Jo is going, it ain't gonna die till the sun goes down. And so
I'd forgotten that part of the story.
God. Yeah and so they ended up taking him to a med check to make sure.
Honestly, what you were describing to me, I morphed into a Simpsons episode.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not equating your dad with Homer.
No.
But it's basically
something that would
there's
happen.
There's nothing. It's all fine. Mm-hmm. He does this. There's
the
nothing
worst
to be
possible,
afraid of.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, and that's what happened.
That's outstanding.
Yes.
Funny.
It was good.
I didn't spend a lot of time
on a lake.
On a lake. Yeah. What did I do in my childhood?
You know what? That's good because I had a lot of ear infections as a kid because that is the nastiest water. It's just filthy, dirty.
I was on the lake a lot, but just sitting there while my uncles were fishing.
Oh, yeah, you guys fish.
But I enjoyed it. I think that's why I learned my
I played a lot of basketball. I played a lot of basketball all day long. I played.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That
we
was
called
the
it plastic bat and ball.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I'd leave, in the morning.
We played cup ball a lot.
What is cup ball?
Cup ball. We were. It was when we were at the Ball Diamonds, like as kids. My brother would have a game or between.
She's
games.
Far too modest. Her brother was an incredible baseball player.
My brother was an incredible baseball player. Yeah, and so he had. But all the other kids, like siblings who didn't have games at that time, we would get one of those. Remember those cups that you would get at the Ball Diamonds, and they were like waxy.
Oh sure,
and
sure.
And I don't know
sure.
what that was, and we would just smash it into a ball.
Oh okay.
And we would throw it at each other, and we'd smack the ball with our hand like it was a bat for hours. Yeah,
that's all you needed.
That's cup ball, all right. We play plastic bat and ball with a wiffle ball and stuff like that all day.
Oh, yeah.
No, you're fancy. You had a bat and a ball.
Oh, yeah. We were a big city. Yeah, London. Are you kidding me? 6,700 people, by gosh. About the size of Hillsborough, Ohio. That's a hint to who's coming up here in a little bit. Let's go to the email, shall we, from Rob. Hey, Chick. Just got around to Greg Hahn. Great show. It didn't take you long to nail this format. Why, thank you. Isn't it interesting that you've landed on four humans in a room to keep things flowing effortlessly? Did I say effortlessly? Well, thank you, Rob. Oh, thumb down, fart sound. That's from Philip.
It's fart noise, Rob.
Sorry. Hey, Chick, Jess, and that other dude. Love the show.
Nice.
Just wanted to say the thumb down, fart sound. Oh, wait a minute. This isn't right. He says the thumb down, fart noise is from Happy Gilmore.
That's very possible. I was shaped on Adam Sandler movies. Yeah, so that probably has
a
lot
crush
to do
on Adam Sandler.
I did. I still do a little bit. Yeah, I do. I don't know why, because it's always like another Adam Sandler movie. Hey, that's Adam Sandler.
Your favorite rom-com?
Oh, just go with it with fucking Jennifer Aniston and him. What is my problem?
That's a good movie.
Is it?
The part where he's at the driving range and someone tells Happy that he should play in the Waterbury Open. That's for all now. Thanks, Phil.
Thanks, Phil. I appreciate it. Now I can give it because I have a friend, Nick Rajowski, who thinks that he came up with it and I don't think that he did it.
Yeah.
Yes.
This is from Mike. Subject, finally. Chick, I'm so glad you decided to just do it and do a podcast. Jess is hilarious and smart.
And hot. That's a lie. I'm joking.
The smart part.
The smart part's a lie.
Yeah. I'm looking for the hot part. Hang on.
I'm kidding.
It does say hot here.
Uh-huh. Where does he see me? You know what? There's the only picture that people have to go on is the picture on Twitter.
And those are all ridiculous.
And they're all ridiculous. Yeah. Yes. I had a guy one time go, can you show me a real picture of you like first thing in the morning? And I was like, it's a little creepy. Probably not.
Right.
It's not creepy.
And that little square barely can fit your head in there.
My big old melon. Yeah.
You don't have a big... Do you think you have a big head?
We measured heads that one time, remember?
Oh, that's right. See, now I have a little tiny face now that I've lost weight. I lose weight right here in my face.
You have a tiny... But your head is...
My head's big.
Around... No, that's negative. Huh? Your head is really small, like if you measured around your forehead.
I wear a 7.5... A 7 3/8 hat.
That's average. Pretty average.
Yeah.
Where was I?
I don't know.
Finally.
Jess is so hilarious and smart and hot. I'm just catching up on all the episodes now and laughing my ass off. You're the exact thing I need to keep my sanity balanced. I'm going to listen to all the other episodes now. Met you in Rapid City, South Dakota a few years back when you were here for Bob and Tom show. I remember that.
Was that the show? Was that the show that was a... No, I thought... Didn't you and Warren... Like, that was one of the best shows you guys did.
Oh my God, you're right.
Yeah.
We always think of Rapid City.
Well, now you do.
No, I reminded me of it, that was if not the best Bob and Tom comedy show tour that I ever hosted. It was
in South Dakota.
It was great. Rapid City, South Dakota. There was a lonely gentleman in the front row sitting by himself, and I started talking to him as I do when
and
I go
you invited
out to,
him.
And I invited him backstage and
he sat side stage and watched
the whole
show.
He sat side stage and had a great time and all the guys were hilarious and it was really really
funny.
Good time.
Did you go see Mount Rushmore?
I've seen Mount Rushmore so many. I go every time I had to make that drive from South Dakota to North Dakota.
Yeah.
I stopped at Waldrug.
Sure.
And the first time I did it, though, I was all by myself.
Oh.
They gave me a Toyota something, like the shittiest rental car of all time. Toyotas are great and everything, but this was an old,
old rental car. Yeah.
And I made the drive and did it by myself. I listened to Car Talk the whole way.
Car Talk?
I love Car Talk.
Oh, is that when you drove across the state
and
picked me up at the airport?
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah, but I had to do that drive and I stopped and I went and did the whole thing by myself.
Let's save that story for another time.
Okay.
I want to hear more of that.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, Carol.
From Heather. Hello, Jason or Chick or Jess. I'm listening to the podcast with Roy Wood Jr. and the discussion about broadcasting from a Bigfoot hunt. To answer your questions, yes, there have been Bigfoot sightings in Indiana. There's a show all about finding Bigfoot, and they spotlighted a place here in Indiana where they have been. There have been many sightings. My paranormal.
I bet it's by Lake Lemon.
You think?
Yeah.
Might have been in the Martinsville area.
I bet. Yeah. No, that's down there. So
my paranormal group.
Oh, okay.
Has gone on a couple of these hunts, but with no success. Wish we had some great evidence to share, but no such luck. However,
who is this, Heather?
Yeah. I'm sure that if you really wanted to do a podcast from a hunt, we would be happy
Let's
to help.
Do it. We have to do this. You guys don't even know.
I enjoy the podcast immensely. Keep up the great
Oh, Heather.
If we could get like Bigfoot in here, that'd be great. But
no,
how are we going to record as we're out?
My concern.
I get a new Bigfoot hunting outfit and everything. We can do this. This will be fun.
Awesome.
You can wear that
oak.
Shirt.
I could wear
that.
See how we tied all that together?
Mossy oak, yes.
It's a mossy oak.
Have you guys ever seen a mossy oak wedding?
No.
Oh, yes.
I think I have, actually.
Dresses and the whole thing.
Yeah, I think you might be right.
They got married in a tree stand.
Did you guys know that the Off the Air podcast with Chick McGee and Jess and Jason is brought to you by GoDaddy?
I did.
Yeah, Jess knew that.
I knew that.
It's the world's largest provider of web hosting with over 55 million domain name registrations. and over 10 million customers. Why aren't you one of those customers?
I am.
I don't want to get in your business. I know you are.
I am.
I'm talking to them.
Mm-hmm.
Why aren't you one of these customers? Go to chickmcgee.com, click on the GoDaddy banner. The GoDaddy Bigfoot banner is what it is. Mm-hmm. And you'll get your brand new domain, only $4.95, including a free one-page website, personalized email account, photo album, and more. All you have to do, go to chickmcgee.com, click on the GoDaddy banner right now. Or check out at GoDaddy and use the code McGee, M-C-G-E-E, and you'll be all set with GoDaddy.com.
I got to check out that photo album thing.
You are in dire need of a giant photo album housed somewhere.
To look on
that. That's a great idea.
I'm going to have to check that out.
Got to back up your backup.
On GoDaddy, yeah.
That's right. The Off the Air podcast continues. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to introduce our special guest for this podcast. It's the one, the only, the long, lean Ohioan from Hillsboro. ladies and gentlemen, it's Drew Hastings. Hi, Drew.
Hi. How are you guys?
Hi, Drew.
First of all, what is so GD funny that...
I haven't seen you so long.
No, I have not seen you, and there's a couple of times you've driven towards me, and I veered off to the left. But we have not seen each other in a long time.
You guys almost had a professional working relationship there for a little bit.
Well, we did on the tour, but it almost became yet again
something else.
Yes.
You wanted Jess to help you with your, I'm going to put this in quotes, career.
Oh, with my career, yes, which has turned out to be multifaceted and barely under control.
Yes, you have a lot going on.
A lot going on, and sometimes it's a bit overwhelming. Yeah, it's funny, I try to turn off the plug, more or less, and when I'm on the road... switch over to a creative mind and not let anything bother me. And it just, and as much as I try, it doesn't work. We're in the middle of very serious and heavy labor negotiations right now with the city. I did a bunch of layoffs. There's grievances, lawsuits being filed. Yes.
This is in Hillsboro right now?
Oh, yeah. And it's one of the strongest unions in the state of Ohio. And they're using me or our city as an example. And, you know, I'm going to win. Ultimately, I'll win, I think. But it's, it's a bitch. And then, if you've read the front page of the papers, my safety service director or city manager, some people would call him, was just picked up for DUI. And he's got a picture plastered all over the front of the paper for looks like Nick Nolte. And I just
had that. Drew.
Oh, yeah. He's on.
So how long have you been in comedy?
So it's hard to turn
that off sometimes, right?
When you're it's just all reality, and you have to find the sometimes you
but
can't
overall
find
are you in I mean are you enjoying any aspect
I'm enjoying
of this?
The challenge of it.
Yeah.
Do I like being mayor? That's the question I usually get asked. Do I like being mayor?
Drew, do you like being mayor?
No, not necessarily. I enjoy the challenge. You know what? In the same way that
a prostitute?
No, the same way that, it's a job that needs to be done. Mm-hmm. And there at this point
you
in time
might as well
in history,
do it.
I am the best man
okay.
to get that done. And I know that.
And you feel that responsibility.
Yeah, and I feel that responsibility.
And that's why you run.
And a lot of people are relying on me, yes.
We'll
get it done.
Would you say that you were ready for, like you said, it's a challenge. It's a whole nother challenge. It exercises a whole nother part of your brain than comedy does.
Yeah.
This is another.
Yeah.
Were you ready for something different?
No, was not ready. Well, I was ready for something different. I was ready for, I was ready to make a difference.
Okay.
I mean, I think Chick and I are probably politically very different from each other. But, you know, my take was, this country's in a world of fucking shit. Mm-hmm. I can't do anything about what's going on in America, but I can do something about the one small corner of America I live in. That's Hillsboro, Ohio. That's where I took my stance. So, but I have always felt that running for a mayor of Hillsboro, Ohio was going to be the springboard for kind of small town activism. Does that make sense? And then I thought we could have fun with it too, which we will, you know, with the stand up and stuff. It's been fun.
You had some reality show people approach you and were very serious wanting you to be the host of the mayor of Hillsboro, whatever they would call it. And,
yeah.
But
I didn't
turned them down.
Yeah. I just thought.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I just got finished talking to them in the last week. But you look at any reality show and don't they?
But no, you could do something with that. There's so many small towns that and people that want to do what you're doing, because yeah, there's a lot of big cities and they get a lot of recognition and trying to change things, but there's a lot more small towns, and if you got a lot more small towns trying to make a change.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, but have you ever seen a reality show where ultimately they aren't making fun of the very people they're covering?
Oh,
really?
And in a small and town, that's exactly yeah.
that's
what
yes, and that's yeah. because there is an inherent bias mm-hmm. in Los Angeles, New York, in the media centers, if you will. Mm-hmm. There's always been. I mean, I was out there for a long time. Anybody will tell you that. It's no secret. There's a very big cultural bias towards the South and Midwest.
Sure.
And so if your subject matter is located there, it's going to get the brunt of it. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to allow that to happen to my city. I'm just not going to. Yes, it'd be nice to make that kind of money, but yeah. I just can't do it.
You know, I admire you for that. That's,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you going to run a second?
If you knew me well enough, there's so many things you wouldn't admire me for. It would negate the admiration.
Oh, I know.
We know you.
Oh, yeah,
well
you know
enough.
Some of those things.
Are you going to go for a second term?
To do the job properly.
You need a second term.
I need
right?
a second term, yes. That's where I'll leave that. Next question.
So, how did you. I know you too well. I feel silly asking
no,
you these questions.
No, ask me anything because there's, you know, I mean, I understand. We're in a little different venue here. This is kind of cool. This is very cool.
Fucking A. Yeah. Hey, this shit just got real.
Right. This shit just got real. And, but we're you know, we're talking also about things. There's also a lot of people that are listening that probably don't hear the angles or the, you know, it's one of the things. I was sitting over in the green room and I was thinking about, why is it that I'm frustrated at times with the Bob and Tom show mm-hmm. of late, meaning the last few years? And it's funny because I was staring at my Starbucks cup and the answer,
yeah,
and it was the same answer.
It's right there.
Starbucks, up until about 2 years ago, I don't know if you recall, always had quotes on the sides,
mm-hmm.
quotes okay. from philosophers right. or Mahatma mm-hmm. Gandhi or Kennedy mm-hmm. or a big business leader.
Sure.
They always had famous quotes. They don't have quotes on the side of their mm-hmm. cups anymore. Now, take what, in your opinion, what leaps to your head as to why they don't have those on their cups anymore?
I have no idea.
Someone complained.
Mm-hmm.
What happened was, and that's exactly right, man, they were expressing an opinion by putting those quotes on there. By the mere fact that whoever decided what the quotes
were
putting them on. And as somebody who read the quotes, I can tell you they tended to have a certain lean to
mm-hmm.
them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure people wrote in and said, I love your quotes. I hate your quotes.
Mm-hmm.
So let's pull the quotes. Part of the problem, I think, my frustration at times with the Bob and Tom show over the last couple of years is, you know, in a way, it's funny. Success almost kills you in so many ways.
It's tough trying to please everybody.
Huh?
It's tough trying to please
well,
everybody.
Well, that's
all
exactly
the time.
Right. See, I think you used to have more, I want to say, second tier sponsors, more not as big as sponsors. And when you had smaller sponsors who were maybe a little more fringy, a little more eclectic,
sure.
say somebody like, I don't know if you even have 5-Hour Energy anymore, but somebody that's a little more kind of, mm-hmm. a little more edgy or that's willing to do stuff
uh-huh.
was easier. And as you've gotten, that show got more successful. For example, now I think one of the big sponsors is Home Depot.
Yes.
Well, once you get into the Home Depot category, you know, it's hard for Drew Hastings to go on the Bob and Tom show and express my opinions are this country's going to hell in a handbasket and it's this current president, blah. And you can see Tom just going, God, right? and you understand that now, which is why you have to, you know, which is why I think sometimes that show ends up playing it safer now.
Sure.
And, you know, so that's what I would say. But what led to that question? Oh, something about staring at the cup.
You were staring at the cup. You were staring yes. at the Starbucks cup.
Yes, and the same way Starbucks has gotten playing it more safe with their cup, even though the cup was more interesting before.
That's true, though.
But that's true.
Yes.
But that's true. And I'm not saying anything, you know.
No.
No, I've always said that I've always been in broadcasting, and because I... Well, not always, because initially I was excited just to be on the air.
Sure,
I mean, you
sure.
wouldn't have, I made, it, I sound like the old guy, but I made $95 a week my first job, and I was That was secondary. Oh, I was on the radio afternoons, you know. But then you start, you know, realizing you have some sort of, you know, creative, or people like what you're saying and they think it's funny and stuff. And then not only, more importantly, you think it's funny and you're doing it. And then other people are enjoying what you're saying, which is what I always draw the parallel with the Warner Brothers cartoons, the golden age of Bugs and Daffy. And those guys did those cartoons for themselves. They didn't run a focus group. They didn't go, you know, a child age 8 will like this, what we're going to do right now. Right. They did those shows for themselves. And I still like to think that the Bob and Tom Show, and well, I know the podcast, we do this for ourselves and we do what makes us laugh and we have a good time. And we hope you enjoy it, and a lot of people do. But I still think the Bob and Tom Show, to a certain point, I know for my voice on it, I still try to make myself laugh or make the other three laugh. I don't worry about, you know, losing a sponsor. I mean, I just hope they I hope they understand it and get it and enjoy what we're doing, you know.
Sure. I think you know, it reminds me of Tom when I read something in the green room. There was a quote about Tom on a something that signed a photograph or something on the wall, and there was some quote about Tom and about he thinks too much, and it was a takeoff on the old Greek whatever that philosophy term, but the term that comes to mind for Tom is, I think too much, therefore I am too much.
So, yeah, he wears himself out sometimes. I mean, I know I know that for
a fact. I can almost hear I can almost hear the gerbil wheel spinning in the background.
I see it happen. He's thinking about stuff that's not even happening really, but he's still thinking about it. So, you grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio, is that right?
No, Dayton, Ohio.
Dayton,
Ohio, South Dayton, Ohio.
Soday.
Yeah, Soday.
Is that real?
Soday. Craigslist.
Wait a minute.
What is your specific location? Soday.
Beaver Creek, Huber Heights?
Kettering.
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 All right. Yes, I know Kettering. Exactly where Kettering is.
Kettering and...
I worked in Fairborn. Do you know that?
Yes, I know. Up Route 4 and 69.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. I lived over a laundromat.
And
sure
as we used to say, you didn't run around with any... you didn't run around with any of that...
some side of the city trash, is that what
that's exactly right. I can't think of it. New Carlisle. Yeah, but you actually called New Carlisle.
New Carlisle, or we call it New Carlisle.
Yeah, New Carlisle.
Pronounce all them. Nice.
But Dayton, and my thing in way before stand-up comedy wasn't even a word in my consciousness. Mm-hmm. You know, I was a long-haired hippie. Very dysfunctional, bad adolescence, childhood, whatever. And you know, I'm from Dayton, but when I was about 19, I looked around and I was a long-haired, hippie, heavy, druggy. And I looked around and the one thing that was always a constant was I was always the smartest guy in the group of losers that I ran around with. And I'm sure there are other people out there that find themselves a lot of times in that position. Why is it I always seem to be the guy in the gang, in the group, that has the most on the ball here? Mm-hmm. And you have to leave or I'm just going to end up in prison, you know.
Were you really juvenile delinquent?
I was pretty, yeah.
You stole stuff?
A lot of the guys that I ran with are dead, yeah.
What?
Yeah, yeah.
From drug abuse?
Drug abuse, drug dealing, drug deals gone bad, you know, all that stuff, sure.
But were
sure.
you doing it to get that, you had those creative juices in you even at a young age? Is that because it was a challenge?
Or I was a businessman.
Or did you just do it to get hired? You liked the business?
No, I didn't. You know, I had this conversation on stage last night where I talked about why I'm against the legalization of drugs and why anybody who's a serious drug user would never want to see drugs legalized. And that is... there's a reason why it's called the drug subculture, right? The part of the beauty of drugs is the hunt for drugs. It's the Easter egg hunt for drugs. I know a guy whose chick knows a guy who can get us some Dilaudid and maybe some fentanyl patches. We've got to drive over here. I'll tell you what, drive around. If there's a blue Buick in the driveway, go leave. Don't even stop because that means his stepfather's home and the deal's not going to go.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It's like the chase with anything. It's like when you first meet a guy or a girl.
Yes.
It's the chase.
That's right.
That you enjoy the most.
And that's what the drug thing is. A lot of
I don't know. I like the nice laid back, I got the girl. I like that too.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. And let me ask you this. If drugs are legalized, there is no more... We're hanging out with druggies. We're part of a special taboo group. Mm-hmm. Now it's just, you have nothing. The only thing you have in common is you're standing in Walmart behind the guy who's buying some diabetic diapers and the woman who's buying some suppositories, and you're in next in line for a bag of pot.
So it really is.
It suddenly just puts you in the Walmart crowd. All you are.
There really is truth to... If a girl brings like the bad boy home, part of her attraction to this guy is that her parents don't like this guy, right?
Sure. That was never the case with myself.
No.
No, God no. Fuck no. There's a lot of...
Really?
I think every girl goes through a little bit of a bad guy stage. The degree of bad is, you know, I don't think Jason's wife necessarily did.
No.
But yeah, I think that there's this, you know, I made out with a bartender once in college, and that's as bad as it was. That's it.
To give you a free drink.
So part of
I worked at the bar.
So you think a bigger part of, I just thought it was chasing the high, and you get high that one time, you want to get higher the next time,
You know what, maybe it's short-term goals.
Yes, but it's also the adrenaline of, you know,
making the drug deal, hooking up.
With illegal drugs, in that whole subculture, there are always a lot of interesting scenarios and people you'll meet.
Sure.
You can't say that when you're standing in line at CVS to buy your drugs.
That's what I thought, because you've always seemed like, not that I am, but I've noticed that you seem to be, you know, pretty intelligent. If you'd wanted to challenge your...
Yeah,
because you didn't go to college. You just
I went for 2 years, dropped out.
Yeah, but I'm sure that you dropped out because these professors don't have anything more to teach me.
I had started a little warehousing trucking business, and it was taking up all my time, 40, 50 hours a week.
See, I'm going to tell you something right now. I always thought you made that story up, and you didn't actually.
I started out as a union scab.
Those aren't the same thing.
Huh?
Union and scab's not the same thing.
Yeah,
were you a scab or were
I was
you
a
union?
Scab against, there against was a the Teamsters union. Local 100 union in Cincinnati.
That we don't want any trouble with.
We're on the side of the union.
Yes.
But no, I had ended up, a guy had paid me a bunch of money. A guy had come up to me and said, do you want to make like $200 a day driving a truck? You know, and you got to drive like 2 miles a day. And I'm like, well, fucking A, because I'm from Ohio, right? So
we don't say yes in Ohio. We just say fucking A.
Yeah. So I get up the next morning and I get to the truck and, you know, it turns out that I'm driving across union strike lines. Well, I didn't even know what a union was. Right. I didn't know what a scab was. I'm just a guy trying to make $200.
And how old were you? 20, 22?
23 maybe. Yeah. And... this was a kind of half-hearted union strike anyway.
At the time.
At the time, back in the late 70s. And so...
Is this when Homo Truck was born?
This is when Homo Truck... not long after that. Probably within a year. That's when that story came about, yes. So anyway, I ended up in the trucking business, to make a long story short. And then it ended up taking all my time. So I kind of dropped out of college. And then I'm going to go back and finish college. And then what happened was... I never went back, and I've always been self-employed. So it's kind of like, well, what am I going to do? Go back, get myself a degree, and give myself a raise? You know, so that's the only reason. But I've always been a big reader, to go back to your thing. That's why I was always curious. So, you know.
Well, tell Homo Truck. You remember Homo Truck.
The whole story? But the whole story is almost 9 minutes.
No, cut it down a little bit. But
the story started when there was an Irish pub. And when I say an Irish pub, I mean a real Irish pub. On the east side of Cincinnati, it was called Haps. And it wasn't one of these Cladog or Clada or one of these fake ones where the, you know, the girl wears the plaid skirt.
The tilted kilt.
That's yeah.
a nice
yeah.
place. Is that a chain?
That's a nice place. Uh-huh.
Yeah, okay. Well, it wasn't one of those. This is okay. This is your authentic Irish shithole. And and it was all full of Irish right off the boats. I mean, these guys, you know, the Irish are all trade guys. They're all roofers, painters, you know, whatever. So, and they're all in there. It's all fathers and sons drinking together. And they would be in there. And I was the bartender there. And
At Haps.
Mm-hmm. And they didn't like me. Because they were all Irish, and the owner made you put your name up there.
Oh my gosh! And Hastings.
Oh yeah, hi. Your bartender on duty is Hastings. Hang your little name at W. Period. Drew Hastings. So I just sounded
and Hastings
like,
is very Scottish, you know,
very English, oh, very English. Oh yeah, that just conjured up for them, you know, visions of you know, me of a family crest of me holding a neck down on the ground with a big giant black boot, you know. You know, so I looked like the bad guy in The Patriot. You know, burn them all.
Yes.
Chain the church doors. Yes. So I was attending bar, and they didn't like me, and they wouldn't tip me, but they would tell jokes. And they would say, like, hey, McGuire. You know, that's like, hey, bud. Hey, McGuire, come here. I got a fucking joke for you. These two leprechauns, you see, they're sitting up on the hillside. The one, he says, daughter, hey, why don't you run into town? You pick us up at the wee bit of the dirt. And he comes back, guys, and orders. Sends the second one down, same thing. Well, he sends the third one down. He says, he goes down, he swings right, he comes back. He says, well, how can you have a one out the other? And they'd fucking howl at this shit. You know. They'd howl at this. Oh, this is so funny.
And, so they were insulting not only your family, but your comedy sensibilities.
Yes.
All at the
yes.
same time.
Yeah. Yes. And so they were doing this, and I wasn't making any money. And then they, and actually, the only way I finally got respect from them was they played serious darts, not these plastic kind with the mm-hmm. lights mm-hmm. and the stuff, mm-hmm. but I'm serious darts. And I would stand with my fingers all spread with my hand against the dartboard, and they would stand back regulation and throw them between my fingers.
Oh my God.
And they would be shit faced drunk.
And you'd say you would do that?
Yeah.
To get their respect.
I did that. Well, I did it once, and they went boom, 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 threw about five darts all in between my fingers. And they're like, oh, I guess that's the fucking queer, okay. That fucking queer, he'll never be one of us, but at least he's okay. So, because see, they all thought I was crazy because this was in the first couple of years of Saturday Night Live. And you know, every old tavern had a bar up, sure. a TV uh-huh. up in the corner. Well, you always had on the 11 o'clock news and, you know, whatever, the Mannix rerun. Well, I had on this new show called Saturday Night Live, and I would have it on, and I would just sit there with a bar towel, you know, kind of drying a glass, staring at this show. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my God, Richard Pryor.
Anything like it on TV.
Acting like what it's like to be on acid.
Right.
That's never been done. It was so mind-blowing. I would watch that. And that was the heyday of... So I'd watch that. Hey, get that fucking shit off of here, you know. But anyway, that was the beginning of Home and Truck, and the guy had come in the bar. Do you want to make $200 a day? I said, yeah, fucking A. And I quit, and I did that, and I started driving. So I had a little trucking business as a result of this. So I have my truck parked in the back of a warehouse, and anybody out there in Podland knows, if you know anything about trucks, you leave the back door of a truck open at night, because if it's shut, then freight thieves think there's something in there of value, and they'll break your truck door and open it up. So you leave the truck open. Well, I would come into work in the morning, and I would look back there in the back of the truck as I walk by, and I'd see there's beer cans and stuff in there. Somebody's been in my truck at night. And I'm like, well, who is this? And I'd sweep it out, you know, because I like a clean truck.
Sure.
So, and I come by about a week later, and there's beer cans and cigarette butts, and somebody's peed in my truck. Now I am miffed.
Now you're mad.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you're miffed.
I'm miffed. Yeah. Which is another reason I didn't make it in the truck business. It's hard to be out on the docks trying to exert your authority when you're saying, gentlemen, I am miffed. Exactly. So I said, well, who's doing it? It's the hobos that live right down here by the river. Mm-hmm. It's the hobos. They're coming up here and they're drinking or playing harmonica or whatever it is they do in the back of trucks. So I'm going to catch them in the act, and I decide to come back at night. And I come back at night, and about the third night, I come and check on them. Sure enough, they're in there because that door, the truck of that door is down, and you can actually see the truck moving a little bit. Like, you can tell there's two or three people in there. Yeah. And I'm like, oh my God.
No.
Start the truck up. I padlock the back of the truck, and I take off running. And I'm driving through the industrial sector.
And there's still people in the back
of
the truck.
Oh, yeah. You can hear them. They're bouncing around like human pinballs back there.
Sure.
You know, and I'm going over railroad tracks, airborne and around corners on two wheels, and they're bouncing around. And I do this until the screams start to subside. And I finally, I come back around, swing back around and come, this is after about 20 miles, and I come back and into my alley where the my business is, and I hit, slam on the brakes, ah, let them smack against the front of that truck one more time. And now I've got to let them out of there. I'm a little nervous. So I get a ball bat and I undo the back of the padlock on the truck and I throw open the truck door and I jump back and they are not hobos at all, which is a complete shock. It's three gay men. And I know they're gay men because I don't care what you say. If you've been a city guy, like, you know them generally when you see them. There's generally attributes. They're the way that they hold their eyes. There's a number of factors that will tell you that they're gay. And these men were gay. And
mostly so, because they were nude in the back of your truck.
Well, one had his shirt tied in a knot.
Oh, you know, that kind of thing.
Yes. And,
I'll do that every now
and then. And I asked which one was the ringleader. They always have a ringleader. You'll find that. The other two ran off, and I asked this guy, to make a long story short, what were you doing in my truck? It turned out he was a gay prostitute. And up at the very other end of my alley was a gay bar at the time, very famous gay bar called the Badlands. And he was picking up tricks and didn't want to rent a motel room. So he would walk down the alley, take them in my truck, shut the door, go in there and have sex. And he's doing this 15 or 20 times a night. So I am a small businessman. I've got to respect what's going on here.
Right.
He's making money.
Which shows initiative.
Yeah.
So I get him to run some numbers by me. I like what I'm hearing. And I end up making a deal with this guy. No shit. I said, well, I'll tell you what. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to rent you my truck so you don't have to spend money on a motel. I'm even going to park the truck another block further down the alley so it's closer to that bar so you can get in and out quicker because time is money in the service business.
Right.
Absolutely.
So I rent it to him. Make a long story short, 4 months later, I go to collect my money. He was paying me weekly. And my truck was gone. I come to work one day. The truck is gone. Disappeared. Only truck in a fleet of one is gone. So, you know, I'm sitting on my butt. And I call the police, report it stolen. They find my truck probably 10 days later down in Key West, Florida, on the side of the road with a blown engine. Yeah. He'd stolen my truck and then moved down to Key West. And
but you made some money there for a little bit. If you
for
were
a little bit. But I was very, it was very disappointing.
But then he was out of truck.
Yeah, because I treated him like a son. So, and probably that plays into why I don't have children to this day.
A son you sold into prostitution.
So did you ever see the guy again?
No, never saw him. His name was Eric. I never saw him.
And you never saw him again?
No, never
saw him. Did he know how to, I mean, I assume he blew the engine because he didn't know how to drive the
thing? Yes, he didn't check the oil properly or something. Gays are horrible on maintenance. I mean, everybody knows that. I mean, you see
that
scroll.
They'll blow anything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Engines.
A rod. Yeah, sure. Side of a block.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So.
So when was the first time for you on stage and where was it? Not headlining, but the first.
No. There was a very, very actually famous... in the annals of comedy, there was a very famous room in the Midwest that a lot of people played called DWI in Clifton in Cincinnati. And when I started, it was Emo Phillips. I mean, there was no road. Emo Phillips and Judy Tenuta would drive down from Chicago to play this little college place, a little bar. I mean, a hole in the wall. Will Durst, who was doing a play, I believe, in Cincinnati. He was already a guy who was doing plays. And in his off days, he would come over and do shows. And Larry Reeb would drive down from Chicago and do shows. Me, Bert Chalice, John Rigi, who went on to, who's now a big producer.
Larry Sanders. Yes,
exactly. A lot of people. A couple
of
guys are dead now.
But that was your first club?
That was my first, yes. That was my first thing. That was 1980.
No number, 1980.
Yeah, 80 or 81, yeah.
Wow.
So
yeah.
That was a long time. And then I did not become, there was no road, and I messed around doing stand-up, and you know, it was actually pretty good. I was like, okay, well, this is fun and dandy, but you know what? I gotta get a real career or life right. together. I can't, this stand-up comedy, this, you know, this is something you do, you know, as a hobby after work.
Right.
And I went in and I did my trucking and storage business for another 5 or 6 or 7 years, then came back to comedy, and all those guys from DWI, a bunch of them, they were now on the road. The road had been invented.
So when you said, there was no road,
there was no road work. There was no such thing as going on the road, really.
You just stayed at your home club.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there wasn't even really a home club, or else there would have been a road. There were home clubs everywhere, but there was very few stand-up places.
You just moved to New York City if you wanted to do a
Exactly.
Flight.
You moved to New York. Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And by the time I decided to go into stand-up, when I was fed up with the business world, was 1988.
Now, was that the start of, like, everybody all of a sudden had a comedy club? Is that 88?
Yes, 87, 88, 89, yes.
There was a brick wall everywhere.
Yes, exactly. And that's when I got in. I already kind of knew, had my legs a little bit, because I'd been doing it before as kind of a fun. And then I went and do it seriously. And and then I was on the road for, I was on a long time. But then I met a guy who was a very good friend. It turned out to be a very good friend of mine named Drake Sather, who... I met on the road. He said, oh, you're a walking sitcom. You have to come to L.A. He talked me into coming to L.A., and I came to L.A. in about 94. So,
Was there a moment there when you went from the trucking to the comedy? Was there some big opening that said, all right, I've had it with this. I'm going to do this, and I have a goal?
Yeah, I guess I had a goal. My problem is I've never been real, real goal-oriented. Mm-hmm. I marvel at guys who... they make a plan. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at somebody like in this business who is just all business, Tommy Jonigan. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a kid who, you know, there are certain guys when you look at them through your career, like when I was younger, you knew this guy was going to be a great writer or this or that because I live for this. I do this. I get up. I do Pilates every morning. I write 44 jokes from 2 to 4. From 5 to 6, I call in and do radio interviews. I do a show. Then I go to bed at a decent hour. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's what they do. Mm-hmm. Most of us are not like that. So I would have a vague goal, you know.
But you had development deals and things like that?
In fact, I had one of the largest development deals for kind of an unknown comedian that was out there. There was maybe one or two after me, but not many. I had a big deal. You know, it was over $250,000 with NBC.
Right.
And then I had a deal with Warner Brothers. My problem was when they developed sitcoms for me, two things happened. I was managed by, I was lucky, I had probably at the time the most powerful manager, one of the most in L.A., and he managed another guy, and the guy's name was Jim Carrey, and nobody really knew who Jim Carrey was. And they were all hot to trot with me. I was in development, poised for a show to go on the air. Warren Littlefield was head of NBC at the time, and this Jim Carrey did this goofy little off-the-wall movie called Pet Detective or something, and it took off. And squeaky wheel gets the grease. And what happened was all of a sudden all the management group shifted. Huh? Yeah. And everybody looked at him. And I tend to be a very loyal person. So I stayed with that management company.
And you probably shouldn't have.
And I probably shouldn't have in retrospect. But I stayed with them probably another 4 or 5 years. Carrey, of course, went on and got all the attention. And there were some other, there were other people. Judd Apatow was the other big client, who was nobody hardly at the time. Right. But Apatow was a big client and best friend of my manager. So, those guys were already going to... So I was kind of sitting out there in left field. And I'm not saying any of this against my old management firm. He was a great guy. So that's the way that happened. And at the other thing that happened was when I was going to do the sitcom, the show you went up against was a new show called Friends. And Friends was, it was all of a sudden the beginning of the pretty, which right, I always was right. suspect. When comedy became pretty, pretty people, I knew that it was the end of the line. I mean, I'm a very attractive man. Don't get me wrong.
God knows that.
Well, I'm horribly handsome, but that's beside the point. The point is, you can't use that as a basis in comedy. And when comedy went to ensemble and pretty, I knew it was the end of the road. So, ensemble comedy took over the kind of straw.
Well, you happen to be in the presence of one of the world's foremost authorities on the
That embarrasses me when you
Friends.
Say that.
Why?
Because
you like the suit.
Because
about?
All cool people watch Seinfeld,
okay,
and my dumbass
no,
was watching
no.
Friends.
Let me tell you something. Well, no. I watched the first season of Friends, and I liked it, but then...
And then Rachel was
down
mean to
deep,
Ross.
Rachel was down, mean to Ross, and I took that personally for whatever reason.
What?
So I stopped watching Friends, and I hadn't really watched any of the later seasons until I started watching them with you every now and then, and it really is. I mean, It is a lot of pretty people, but there's a lot to be said for it. I will take one episode of Friends over
any sitcom, anything on TV right now.
Oh, yeah, that's probably
anything. Yes. And of course, Seinfeld.
Right.
Even Seinfeld, though, those early seasons, if you watch first season, second season, they're so fucking slow and there's nothing happening. They didn't really hit their stride until five or six seasons in. And it started to, you know, that was the age of like the 2.5 minute scene, and then they pop around back and forth. But is that what you wanted, a sitcom? And do you think it's over, or do you think there's a sitcom?
I was open to a sitcom. I wanted a sitcom for the I wanted a sitcom, but I was never a fame chaser.
A sitcom for the bottom line. You're a businessman, right?
Well, for the bottom line, but I wanted to be able to make my mark. I wanted to do a sitcom, of course, but you know, I've never been one of those guys, fame at any cost. Mm-hmm. You know, and
are you sure?
Yeah. Well, he just proved that by not doing.
But let's get this wrapped up.
Yeah,
I mean, I think we've done our pre-show wrap up. Let's get on the air and do the podcast.
Okay, that would be a good idea.
I have a question about on YouTube. This is where I saw it. There was that really great trailer that
it was
shot.
One of. And
it was
I'm
the
not,
best trailer I've ever seen for any.
Well, thank you.
The
Battles of Hastings.
Who's ever doing that? And
where
why
is
it hasn't
that?
Seen
well,
the
here's
light
what
of
happened.
Where is
that?
It, Al Roker?
That's good friend of mine who said. Good friend of mine in Denver who worked for Denver, like Rocky Mountain Public Television, the big, like public television in Denver, which is one of the biggest. Old friend of mine, and just thought this whole thing was hilarious, and oh my god, this has got to be a show. So he
and the whole thing is you being a farmer and
me
and
being a fish out of water farmer, kind of an updated Green Acres, and but making it more kind of documentary kind of style, but funny.
We talked about this kind of a Green Acres, Fawlty Towers type, and kind of meld them together, and there. But I still think there's something there.
Oh, I know. He shot it. People loved it. Al Roker. Who has a production company. Al Roker from, what is it, the morning?
Today Show.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Al Roker, I think, bought it, took around and shopped it. One of the things they came back with, love the show, it's too intelligent. Well, how it can be too intelligent, I have no idea. It wasn't. It was me on a tractor saying, you know, don't put your hands near that, you know.
Right.
There was
I always remember the scene that I saw on YouTube. Was there was a bug
flying around
something, and you're waving it.
What about when he's putting a feed in the back of his which car is that?
Oh, that was my like 62 classic Ford F-100 pickup truck. Oh, yes.
Yeah. No, but you had a car
Cadillac.
Too. Do you have a Cadillac?
A Cadillac. Oh, the feed at the feed mill. And I would push the trunk button in the glove box. Could you load it with feed, gentlemen? Thank you.
How much do you think I can
Who do I tip here at the feed mill?
It's still on YouTube, though, right?
It is.
It's still, I think you can see it. I had it hidden for a long time. A lot of stuff during the campaign, because I got a lot of crap during the campaign. Mm-hmm. Oh, he's only running as a PR stunt.
If you go to YouTube, can search the Battle of Hastings.
It was called the Battles of Hastings,
yes. Yeah, it's like eight minutes.
In fact, it was a Hollywood production company that saw that video that said, oh my God, whatever happened to this, contacted me this year and wanted to do a show based on them seeing that.
Okay. Well,
so that's where that is, yes.
Yeah, but that's the first time I've watched a trailer in a long time and wanted more.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah, it was very good.
Maybe the podcast could have a video division.
There you go.
Perfect.
I don't know why not.
Those webisodes are. Mm-hmm.
So when they approached you to do the mayor thing, the reality
show. Wait, nobody approached me to do. Oh, you mean the reality show.
Yeah, the reality show. Did you ask for complete control of final edit?
Which
I'm guessing they would not give to you.
Yeah, they would not give to
me. Did you at least ask for it?
Well, we weren't that far in negotiation, but I did say, I did say something to the effect, I'm not going to let you just shoot carte blanche and air it.
Right.
I'm going to have some say in what goes on. And I think they read then, he's going to want some. Mm. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I've ended it nicely. I just said, well, if you think it's a great idea this year, it'll be a great idea next year.
Well,
and if you think
go.
So, then let's talk.
That's right.
So are you going to try to, you said you're to do a good job, you need a second term.
Need a second term, yeah.
Are you going to scale back on your touring? Or
I don't know.
I think you've picked it up, though, recently.
Because
I've seen you more. That's what I'm basing it on.
No, it's picked up some more. You know, I don't know what I'm going to do. You know, there are people that would say, man, you're in a great place, Drew. You know, you're wherever you are in your career and keep going. There's a part of me, I've been doing this 25 years. There's a part of me that thinks about getting out while I'm on top. Yeah. And I have a lot of fans that would go, what? My only fear ever in stand-up comedy is it's like looking at a rock band where you go to see an old rock band and you're like, oh, that's just pathetic. They really should have gotten out of the business 5 years ago. Now they're just a reminiscence act.
They're like a cover band.
Yeah, and it's just an old guy on stage doing a bunch of
greatest
hits.
Or the Brett Favre. Yeah.
Yeah, and I never, you will never would want to be that guy. Do I still have more to say? Yes. It's a matter of time. It's,
see, I've always thought, because I can plainly remember when, I don't know if it was your character, Jack Freeman, or you that did the bit about the kittens in the trunk of the car. In the trunk of the car. But our good friend Paul Gilmartin brought us that bit.
Yes, and that's how I ended up on the Bob and Tom.
Oh, really?
That was the first appearance. Yeah. It was a pre-recorded bit, and we'd never really played pre-recorded bits, especially submitted from other comedians. We just like to have them come on and do it. But Paul assured us, you guys are going to love this if you play it. And I still remember where I was. And I just thought that was the most, the funniest, most original piece I'd heard in a very long time.
Well, thank you. In fact,
my point is, no one sounds like, I mean, some of the comedians are like, oh, well, he's kind of like that guy, and he's kind of like that guy.
You can't do that with Drew.
You can't do that with Drew. No.
Do you know how many people I know that have used that little catchphrase? You can always go back to the car for more.
You know what? I thought about it seriously last night. I had another fan stop me last night after a show, and why don't you do Jack Freeman? And you know, really, I'm torn right now at this point in time. It'll be interesting to look back a year from now to this podcast, because I'm at a real point in time where I'm going to decide whether I'm going to take off a couple of years, kind of from stand up and write a book, because I really want to get a book written. And a lot of it's written. It needs editing. You know, 10, 12 years of material written. Or do I do a project? And the project, if I did it, would probably be Jack Freeman. The economy is actually perfect for Jack Freeman now.
Yeah. And it's only going to get crazier first of the year.
It's only going to get crazier. And I could write a new Jack Freeman show and put it out there. He's great for radio. He's great for touring. And it's packaged. Jack Freeman is a, you know, he's a, quote, faux seminar.
Right.
So when you go and put it somewhere, whether it's on a Bob and Tom comedy tour or in a comedy club or at a theater, it's a packaged show. It's Jack Freeman and, you know, on his tour, Stop Me Before I Succeed Again tour or whatever that is. Right,
right.
And I love doing the character.
One of the things about that character is you can kind of get away with some not so PC stuff.
Yeah,
is that fair to say?
Yeah, the problem is where he's limited is he's a more one-dimensional character. Jack Freeman doesn't ever talk about, well, my problems or my love life or this or that.
Oh,
because
Jack Freeman
stays very, I am this and this. And
well,
I,
no, you, Jack Freeman looks at love like a transaction.
That's love is like a transaction, right? That's exactly right.
Just like a financial transaction.
That's exactly right.
So what did you do those, you said you were in L.A., you were kind of bubbling, and you stuck with your manager for 4 or 5 years.
And then I kind of floundered around, and I...
And you played poker.
Played poker. I got into a lot of poker.
But you made a lot of friends playing poker.
Made a lot of friends playing poker, yes. I had a lot of fun with that.
Bob Odenkirk. And
Odenkirk, Sarah Silverman. Who else was playing in those games?
Well, is that how you got you were in the Bob Odenkirk movie? Let's Go to Prison. Is that
I was in that?
Let's Go to
Jail. He was actually, I was fortunate. He was behind a lot of my projects. He directed the Jack Freeman L.A. show. He directed another one man show of mine. He was a big fan of mine for my sketch and one man show stuff. And then he actually had me in 3 pilots that just didn't happen to air. I was in 3 Bob Odenkirk pilots, one for like Warner Brothers, one for NBC, and one for maybe somebody else. In fact,
Do you remember what character you played? Or
I was always kind of the second, third tier Michael Richards kind of heavy, edgy character that came in.
Well, no, weren't you
the one that was
the paranormal and you were a bartender who told the future or something like that?
The near future.
The near future.
That was a Bob Odenkirk project.
That's right.
That was a Bob Odenkirk project, which they were sure was going to get picked up, which didn't. In fact, that might have been an HBO project.
I got that feeling when you said the near future. Because was there criticism once again that it was too intelligent? Do you think?
I don't know, but that would not have been mine. That was Bob Odenkirk's project. So, you know, but he's a smart dude. So who knows? But that was a lot of my frustration always with LA. And
how frustrating is that for you to, like, do you ever see a time when you're going to mesh and be popular with the people that you want to be popular with? You know what I'm trying to say?
I am popular with the people that I want to be popular with because they're at my shows. Right. And it doesn't matter whether that's 84 people or 290 or 640.
Right.
They are the people that are at my shows. And people have not like this is scrawled before my name everywhere, but yeah, I guess I have a reputation as being an intelligent comedian. Well, I don't see it that way. I see it as I'm just a bright Midwest guy. That's how I see myself. I love vocabulary. Sure, I might have a little better vocabulary than the average bear because I like to read and exercise words. But the average Midwest audience is who I write for, who I honed it for, and who comes to see me. I mean, really, they're no different than you or Jason or Jessica, right? Yeah,
right,
I mean,
right.
You know, I'm not writing above it. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to get my shit, right?
No.
I mean, you don't.
That should be a t-shirt. You don't have to be a rocket scientist
to get my shit.
But I think it's smart enough to where Midwesterners appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That you're not talking down to them. Yeah.
Yes. Right. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I understand.
I don't know how this question is going to come off, but I hope it's okay. Are you mad or upset or frustrated that you're not more popular?
There was a time that I was.
And do you look at that as you're not being exposed enough or the people aren't getting you or?
No, I think it goes with, I mean, like he just said, he appreciates the crowd that he has.
Right.
That's who he's writing for. You know what I mean?
And it goes back to, I've not been a fame chaser. So I have not done the things. I'm not a networker. I'm not a schmoozer.
Right.
I'm not a...
I'll tell you this.
Here's what you have. Somebody told me this, and I have no idea. I can't even remember who told me this. A comedian years ago, 15 years ago. And he said, you only have two things in stand-up comedy. You only have two things at your disposal. You have the power to say no, which is, you know, you have the power to say no to an offer.
Right.
A gig that pays $800. Or a show that pays crap, or a writing job. But you have the power to say no, and you have your integrity. That's all you have. And I have tried to hang on to that all the way through. And
so does it irritate you to see comedians? Because we were at a show, Jess and I were at a show not that long ago, and we were at a comedian, and this guy is killing. Just killing. And he's not said anything that I thought was funny or just was funny. And we were both kind of discouraged, you know?
Yeah.
Discouraged.
But you
can, like,
I don't think you can be. I think I would probably... no, because life isn't fair. And you can't legislate that. And you can't, you know... But I think the one thing that I probably... That probably disappoints me more than anything... I think that there's opportunities I've not had that I did not have because of my political beliefs. I really believe that. I mean, it was a known fact that I was a conservative in L.A. And I mean, I know for a fact that I was not given work because of that. I mean,
so that exists. That really exists.
Oh, there's no question that exists.
I think
that very definitely hurt me. Had I kept my mouth shut and never talked or said my politics,
well, as you said,
I mean, would be much further ahead today.
I've always known you're a conservative
guy.
I don't know how.
But I consider myself kind of a drug-using conservative.
I was going to say.
You know what I mean? Baby boomer conservative. I've got a past. I'm this, I'm that. I don't give a damn what you do in your bedroom. I don't give a shit what you do over here. But I tend to be kind of a conservative.
But I don't know how hard of a conservative you are and how much is it a cartoon and that you want to seem more conservative than you are.
I just think he doesn't seem as conservative as we would look at conservatives because I know in conversations with Drew backstage, he actually listens to what other people have to say. You know
I think it's like you're saying, I'm not my father's Oldsmobile. I'm not my father's conservative. I'm not that.
So your father was conservative.
I don't know what my father was. He left at an early age, and we don't have time to get into that.
But he looks just like you.
And his name is Drew Hastings, and he wears big black glasses.
is this all true?
Yes, and I went to meet him. This is a true story. We found each other. He was living 4 hours east of me. And it turned out we smoked the same brand of cigarettes.
Wow.
Yeah, very weird.
Genetics.
Both, he even more so, very anti-authority, anti-government. I mean, like, yeah.
There's nothing more exciting than going through TSA in an airport with Drew.
Oh, God.
Do you have any lotions or anything in your bag?
Yeah.
Whatever
First of all, let's remember who works for who here. You work for us. We don't work for you.
This is all true.
Yeah. So anyway, so my dad, and I'll tell you this quick story. So I meet with him, and it's like, I'm like 42 years old or something, and we meet, and we have this serious, let's meet for coffee, and we're having a Maxwell House moment or whatever. We're having coffee. At the end of it, he gets kind of serious, and he pulls this envelope from his jacket, and he says, well, there's something I'd like you to have. I've wanted you to have this. And I said, oh, okay, what is it? Can I open it now? Yes. I open up the envelope, and it's a map of a cemetery, and it's a certificate. It's a plot in a cemetery. He's given me a plot in the cemetery. And he said, I want you to have this. It's a grave right next to where I'm going to be buried. And I said, well, that's great. Is this when you finally want to spend some quality time together? This is my thought. Oh, this is where we'll play catch up, Dad. So, true story. God. So I spend the night in a motel. Next day, I go out to the cemetery. He wants to go out and show me the place. It's up on a hill, and it's in eastern Ohio. And it's up on a hill. And I look it over, and I thought, well, this is kind of nice. I can hardly wait to break ground. So, but all comedy comes from pain.
Yeah, that's what they say.
I'm a fervent believer. Yes.
Oh, Drew.
It's uplifting to hear, and obviously you're different than a lot of guys today. A lot of guys today might not even make it out of college, and they've already decided they're going to be a comedian just because of the lifestyle. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I have Monday, sure. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday off. And you have gone, you've done all these LA, you've had the sitcoms, and none of it happened. And you're okay with that. And you're like, you know what? I'm going to go do some good as a mayor here in Ohio.
Well, yeah, but I guess I'm in my mid-50s now, late-50s now, and hopefully you mature some. I mean, I didn't even start staying up. I really feel sorry in a way. I think they're hurting themselves when I hear young guys that are starting comedians. I mean, a lot of guys have done that, but starting at 19 or 22.
Right.
I didn't start till I was 31, really. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'd messed around with it. Like I say, I'm kind of out of college and monkeying around with it. But, I didn't start standing up to it really until I was about 31 or two. And so I'd had a life before that. Mm-hmm. I'd already banged a lot of chicks. I'd had my heart broken six times. I'd had five jobs. You had something to talk about.
It's kind of the same reason you wait to have kids till you're in your 30s. You
know? Yeah.
I mean, yeah. To live in, yeah.
To
yeah.
live some.
So. Or later than that, to really appreciate kids, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How self-aware are you of your presence? Because you have, I'm being serious. You have, and I've never been in a room with
a very unique.
Well, yeah, I've never been in a room with Bill Clinton or whatever, but he walks in the room and people in the room feel, mm-hmm. there's something. You have that something. Are you aware of it?
Yes. I am. I try not to be aware of it. It is a burden at times because there's times I just want to be Drew ordering a Mountain Dew to go.
Yeah.
It sometimes wears on you that I'm always stared at.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But that comes with, that comes with the turf. Jesus had this problem. I don't know that he did, but...
Want to go into a convenience store and buy some black licorice and not be bothered.
Yeah, but you can't find black licorice in a convenience store. Yeah. Oh, they say they have licorice, and they'll point you over to it, but it's, these are red Twizzlers. That's not the same thing at all. And then you can get good and plenty, you've got to dig through a candy-coated shell.
That's true.
But... No, about the presence thing. Yeah, that's a double-edged sword. Mm-hmm.
But you know what? Even I found when we traveled together, mm-hmm. People who didn't necessarily there were times where it was just Drew and I on a flight, and it was just the mm-hmm. two of us. And it is. It's almost like you have an aura. Like mm-hmm. people just look and they're like, he seems important.
And he seems.
You know what
like
I mean?
He seems
like somebody. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess I sometimes am. Sometimes I'm surprised by that. I'm like, why?
Yeah.
What is it? What? I'm just sitting here reading a book. Or ordering somebody to do something.
Right.
Boy. Oh, boy.
Yes. But be when sharp. You were in your 30s, did you enjoy that? I mean, did you use
I'm
it
not
to your
sure
advantage?
I had that then.
Oh, really? You think it came with age?
You know, I don't know. Either that or I had it, but I didn't know it because I was nowhere near as self-aware as I was.
Right, right.
You know, I was just running around like a hyperactive kid till mm-hmm. I was 35 or mm-hmm. 40,
sure.
You know?
Sure.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it makes plenty of sense.
It's like women who have a great deal of sexuality and charisma, mm-hmm. and they don't even know it. Guys always hassling me? Why are guys always talking, hassling me? Well, as you get older as a woman, you realize, oh, this is why. It's not just that I have big tits. I have a certain aura, the way my lips are mm-hmm. shaped and how I walk. And mm-hmm. you don't really realize what you have mm-hmm. until a later age.
And then you decide how you're going to use it.
Yeah, now I've screwed it up. Yes.
What's your favorite piece that you do on stage now? You kind of look forward to it, or maybe your smartest piece, I don't know, or is that what you enjoy the most?
I don't know. Right now I'm exercising a lot of material. I have a ton of material, and right now I'm bringing out material that I haven't done in a year or two, and I'll bring it back because I haven't done it, and somebody will say, how come you never do that one story? And I'm like, yeah, you're right. That erotic asphyxiation story, I do not tell hardly ever. And I just started bringing that back. And that's fun because I really like the timing in that, mm-hmm. that story.
I would agree.
That story. And I would have to say that ranks up there right now. Mm-hmm. And I've got a new one about, I've got a new one that I'm working out that I really kind of like that, it builds and it's not done, but I talk about, have you ever sat in a left turn lane in traffic and you're looking just kind of staring and you're looking at the car in front of you and you notice that the turn signal of the car in front of you is completely synced with your turn signal. You ever seen that?
No, I don't think I've
ever noticed that.
Every now and then,
turn signal is
they sync up and
they're sync up and it's like, oh my God, what are the odds of that? The car in front of me, our turn signals are blink, blink, they're there. And you are marveling at this and you wait and as the light starts to turn, you realize all of a sudden they're starting to go out of sync, just imperceptibly. Blink, 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 blink. And as the car moves off and turns to the left in front of you, it really starts to go out. Blink, blink, blink. And that's what relationships are to me. They start out, oh my God, look at us. We are so completely in sync. We are as one. And then as time goes on, sometimes in the shorter distances, it changes to have a traffic light. Blink, blink. Oh, yeah. I guess it wasn't.
What is that? Sometimes your love lasts.
Sometimes you ever have the kind of love that ends the moment they leave the room, and you try to squinch, you know, and try to hold it and keep it, but by the time she's down the stairs and out the door, you realize my love has exited the building like Elvis. Elvis has left the building like my love.
You've got a website, right? DrewHastings.com. DrewHastings.com.
I don't use that much. It seems like social networking seems to have taken over everything.
Are you anymore. Twitter yes. at Drew Hastings?
He does
I've got Twitter. I've got a bunch Twitter. Of Twitter. You know, I'm one of the only guys. I don't understand. I look at my Twitter page and I have an extra 200 people. And I'm like, well, I haven't said anything in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand where they come from. I try to Twitter very seldom. I only have 650 tweets I've ever done.
That's
really
good.
Oh yeah, but I make it a point, I never tweet unless I have something to say. I never unlike you, I've seen some of your tweets, you're like, I'm waking up, mm-hmm. I have to poop, uh-huh. No, you
that's
do
that's what was happening no. at the time.
Yes, no, I know, but you're somebody who likes to tweet.
I like to tweet.
I don't.
He tweets a lot during the show.
Yes, I know, but see, you use it as a different tool than me, and I completely respect that. And that's why you have a billion more followers
that's
than me.
It's not
though,
a
too.
Billion. It's some. But you've got a lot. I appreciate that.
No, but it works. But you're a different.
I'm different.
You're a different guy than me. So that's you right. would view Twitter differently. You know, for me, it's like the Ten Commandments. Only, is this important enough to add an 11th commandment?
Oh, so there's a whole process you go through.
Oh, yeah, kind of. Yeah. Oh,
okay.
Every now and then, I'll use it to promote. Hey, I'm going to be here at this place, but. Sometimes I'll do that.
All right. Well, thanks, Drew.
Well, I'm just getting started.
DrewHastings.com. He'll be in a neighborhood near you before You know it. Here, let's see if we can do this again. What the heck is that? Is that me?
It's some kind of...
Which one's this?
Oh, this is the Sons of Ralph. Hang on.
Let's do this.
There we go. Oh. Thank you, Jazz.
Thanks.
Thank you, Jason.
Absolutely. I loved it.
Our guest has been Drew Hastings, drewhastings.com. We'll see you next time. Thanks for downloading the podcast called Off the Air. I'm Chick. Good night, everybody. So big and to be so fast because we up in the mud house over in the club.